Hello and welcome to the 538 Politics Podcast. I'm Galen Druk. One of the big questions heading into Election Day this year is not just who will win, but when we'll know the winner. Unlike past elections, when we at least went into election night expecting to know the results by the end of the night, Americans are being cautioned that it could take days or longer to get results this year. States have changed their voting rules in response to the coronavirus pandemic, and more people are voting by mail than ever before. Counting all those mail ballots will be a new task for many states that could take time. Also, some states accept mail ballots after Election Day, so long as they've been postmarked by November 3rd. And the data that we usually look to as an indicator of how wrapped up a race might be, like the percent of precincts reporting, may not be particularly useful if it doesn't take into account mail ballots. So in order to get a sense of what we'll know on election night and in the days after, I've invited the executive director of elections at ABC News, Dan Merkel, to join the podcast. He oversees the decision desk at ABC, which is responsible for making state-by-state election projections. Dan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
And I'll also mention that, as many listeners probably know, 538 is part of ABC News. So let's start with the basics, Dan. What is the role of the decision desk on election night and potentially in the days after?
So the decision desk is a group of experienced social scientists, statisticians, and election experts. And our job is to look at all of the available data on election day, all of the statistical models, and project the winners of elections when we have a high degree of confidence that the leading candidate will, in fact, be the winner.
What is the difference between projecting the result of an election or a race and calling a race?
So at ABC News, we use the term project because it still is based on data and probabilities. So we don't call winners. We don't declare winners. That's a little more definitive. So what we're doing is we're estimating, based on all of these data, when we think the leading candidate has a strong enough lead to be projected the winner. But it isn't until all the data are counted and certified that you actually have a real winner.
And that's in large part up to secretaries of state around the country. You said that when you have a high degree of confidence, you can project a winner. How high of a degree of confidence do you have to have? When are you ready to make a projection on election night?
So it's a statistical criterion that we set, and it's 99.5% confidence. So the models give us an estimate of that confidence. And so what that means, just on chance alone, is that, you know, 99.5%, based on chance alone, you could be wrong one time out of 200. Over the last 20 years, we haven't had any mistakes. We've done hundreds of projections. And that's because not only do we use the statistical models, but we bring our own independent experience and judgment to it as well.
So in order to get to that 99.5%, what data are you looking at?
We have a wide variety of data on election night. We first start out by looking at the exit poll data. This is a survey of people who are interviewed as they leave the polling place. Combined with that are phone polls of early and absentee voters. In addition, we also have exit polling of in-person voters that are happening right now leading up to election day. So that's all polling data. And that's data that we combine in the right proportion and get an estimate of what things look like before poll closing time. If a race is not close, if it has a large margin in these data, we can project the race off of this polling data at poll closing time. At poll closing time, then we start getting actual vote data, two types of actual vote data. Precinct level data, that is a sample of precincts in a state that are fed into precinct models. And then separately, we get the vote at every county across the country, and those are fed in the county models. And so then all of these data, you know, it's combined with the exit poll data, the phone poll data, the actual vote data. Various models look at it in different ways. And then we're looking for consistency across the models, and we're looking for good representation across the state. Do we have all the different parts of the state? Do we have a good mix of absentee, early vote in, and election day vote in? And so when we have a really good mix of everything and the model tells us that it's projectable, that's when we'll do it. But we could also have other situations where the model thinks it's ready to be projected, but if it's only data from a certain part of the state or if it's only election day data, then we know based on that that we need to wait for a better mix of data.
All right, so there's a lot that I want to unpack in all of that, but let's begin with the exit polls, because as we've talked about on this podcast and seen in past elections, exit polls can be notoriously inaccurate. It was the case in 2016, for example, that the early exit polls reflected the polling in the days before the election, which suggested that Hillary Clinton was going to win that election. So why rely on that exit polling data, and how heavily do you rely on it?
We rely on it a fair amount, but like I said, we would never project a race simply off the exit poll data if it's a close race. We will wait for actual vote data.
And what does that mean if it's a close race?
Like a safe race, which is double digits, we would project off of it. But if you're talking this year, like a Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, anything like that, we would wait for actual vote data before projecting that. And so to answer your question about the accuracy of the exit poll, it's like any survey. It has sampling error, it has non-sampling error, non-response, that kind of thing. We have seen over the years that the exit poll can overstate certain candidates, Democratic candidates, for example. This varies election by election, and it varies state by state, precinct by precinct. And we find typically that if people with more and less education vote differently, that could impact the exit poll estimates, because we find that people with more education tend to be more likely to fill out the questionnaire. So after the 2016 election, Edison, the company that does our exit polling, has implemented an education adjustment in the exit poll, so starting in 2016. So we had that in 2018, and that was an improvement, and we'll be using that again in 2020. And so that gives us a little better read. We had already been adjusting for age, race, and sex demographics in the exit poll, but like I said, in 2018, we've also started adjusting for education as well, given the importance of education in the 2016 election.
How else are exit polls different this year, mainly as a result of the pandemic and changes in voting patterns, particularly an increased number of people voting by mail or early in person?
Well, the first thing, obviously, is with the pandemic, Edison has had to change some of the procedures in the exit polling to make it safer for people to participate. So typically, an exit poll interviewer will, they sample voters as they come out every fourth or fifth voter based on a preset interval. And they approach a voter typically, and they go right up to them and hand them the questionnaire and a pen and ask them if they participate and fill it out. We cannot do that this year. So instead, the interviewers are approaching from at least a 6-foot distance, asking people to participate. And then if they agree, then they're directed to a table that has the questionnaire. It has single-use golf pencils so people don't have to use the same pencil. It has hand sanitizer, sanitizing wipes, and single-use gloves for people. And so in that way, we're able to make sure that it's a safe procedure. And Edison did test out this procedure in the primaries in the spring and found that it really was an effective way. And people still were able to take the exit poll survey at about the same rate as we've seen in the past. The other big change, like you mentioned, is because of the increase in mail and early voting, we've had to increase the percentage of interviews done on telephone and done in the early in-person exit polls. So in 2016, about 42% of people voted absentee or early. So we were still doing the phone surveys then. But we're expecting it could be 60% this year. So as a result, we've had to really increase the interviews with people who are not voting on election day.
All right. So that's the exit poll data. How is the other data that you collect in order to make projections different this year? You mentioned precincts. Of course, that can be somewhat complicated by the fact that there are many mail ballots that may not be included in that precinct level data. So how are you adjusting for all of that?
So at the precinct level, you're right. In a lot of states, the precinct data will only be the election day vote. But in some ways, that's good, because when those data come into that model, we get a very good read on what the election day portion is. And then we can combine that with the telephone polling of absentee and early voters or the in-person early voter. In addition to that, though, some states like Texas and Florida, they release big dumps of early and absentee data either right away or early in the vote count. And so we can take a look at that as well. And so it's become more complicated over the years. When I first started doing projections in 1994, it was like 9% of the vote was early and absentee. So all the precinct models were very accurate. Now, what we have to do is kind of triangulate on what the answer is. So we'll be looking at the precinct model of election day vote. We'll be looking at the absentee vote that's reported early by the states that break it out. Some states break it out better than others. And like I said, looking at the phone polls and the early voter exit polls, and really just trying to piece it together that way.
All right. So there's a lot of moving parts there. Which states are you actually expecting you could have results from on election night? And of course, I assume that you will be calling states like New York, for example, or Kentucky when the polls close. But in terms of the states that we're all going to be watching for competitiveness and who wins between Biden and Trump, what states might we get results from, reliable results on election night?
Right. The safe states, we expect to have projections of poll close, but in some states we don't have exit polls. And so if it's a safe state, we do not project a poll close. That doesn't mean necessarily that that state's going to be close. It means we're just going to wait for some actual vote count data there. But there are a number of states that have really good experience counting early and mail-in vote. And depending on the margins, we should be able to make projections in those states. Now, obviously, if it's very close, we'll still have to wait for more data. But I'm thinking, you know, states like Texas, North Carolina, Georgia, Florida, those are states that we expect to count similar to in the past. Well, of course, those are also expected to have close races. So if it's a 1 or 2 point race, then yes, we'll be waiting for more data. But if we do have a few point margin, you know, 3, 4, 5 points, then those races should be projectable. And then other states like Virginia, New Hampshire, they're expected to have lower absentee and early vote, but also as a result, we'll be expected that they'll be counting similar to how they've counted in the past. And then you have states that are key states that could be more problematic this year: Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania. These are states where the early vote and absentee will be quite a bit higher. And specifically, Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, they're not going to be processing the results before Election Day like some other states. And given the big increase, we expect it'll take longer to get those results there, especially in the bigger counties. And given that they're key states and expected to be fairly close, we could be waiting quite a while for a projection in states like that.
For those slower counting states, when are you expecting results there?
You know, it could be in the days following. I have no idea. Like I said before, we could be surprised and they could count sooner than we expect. But we don't know because, you know, the one thing that helps us normally in election years is that states are pretty consistent in counting their vote and counties are consistent in counting their vote election to election unless there's been a big rule change. And if there's a rule change, we take that into account. But pretty much we can look at past reporting in a state to see what the current reporting in this election will be. Here, we don't have that option in a number of states. And so it's our expectations. We just have to be more cautious and we have to be ready for anything.
So is it fair to say that you're going into election night not expecting to call states like Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania by the time the night's over?
That would be my expectation. Certainly, we could be surprised. The margin could be bigger than expected. The states could count faster than expected. So I wouldn't count out projections in those states. But like anything, it's hard to predict what states will do, and it's hard to predict what the exact margins will be. But we'll be looking at it very closely. And if we can make the projection on election night based on all the data we have and knowing what's out, then we'll do that. And the other part of it is we know what we have, but if we also know what we don't have, that also may enable us to do a projection before a big chunk of some pieces of data are in. It really just depends on the circumstances.
Do you think it would be possible to project an overall winner on election night without results from Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania?
I think that would be very difficult. You know, again, nothing's impossible. And at the D-Desk, we're prepared for anything. But it seems likely that if we're not able to project those, we'd have to wait on the overall. Because the way we project the president is, it really is when someone gets the 270 electoral votes. So it's not like we're modeling it and saying, we think one of the candidates will get there. We actually have to have the states projected, added up to the 270 in order to have a winner.
So are you going into election night then thinking that you won't project an overall winner on November 3rd or in the early hours of November 4th?
Well, like I said, I think it's a distinct possibility, but I'm not going to say never because I don't want to set that expectation. You know, we've seen unexpected things happen before, so it's possible, but not probable.
So let's go back to the states where we might be expecting fuller results on actual election night. Say the results from Florida and Texas come in, and obviously, hypothetically, Biden were to win those two, it would seem like there's no path for President Trump to win that election. Would that still prevent you from projecting the overall winner? Or if Biden wins Texas, is that a scenario in which you could probably project an overall winner?
Well, so at the D-Desk, like I said, we only say we have a winner when we've projected 270. So we're just based on the vote, the data, and the projection in specific states adding the 270. So we would not project a winner for the presidency, but we would leave it to the pundits and to the people talking on the air to explain, here's what it means in terms of we have projections for Biden or Trump in certain states. What does that mean for the overall outlook? And that's kind of more of an analysis rather than a projection. And so we would leave that to other people in the news division to make that analysis.
Can we dig a little deeper into exactly why states like North Carolina, Florida, Texas, or Georgia might be able to have fuller results on election night that would allow you to project them?
Yeah, really what it comes down to is states like that have already had high numbers of early voting and absentee voting in the past. So first of all, they're used to processing that data quickly. Secondly, a lot of those states allow the counties to start processing the ballots ahead of election day so that when poll closing time hits, they're able to dump a lot of that vote in. Other states, like I mentioned, Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, are not able to start processing it before election day. And so you've got these big stacks and big numbers of votes that need to be processed. So a state that's processing for the week or two before or as they come in is going to get a head start on some of the states that are not allowed to do that. And it varies widely across the country by state.
Are there particular regions or counties in those states that we could have full results for or close to full results for relatively early that will give you a good sense that maybe you and your team start to zoom in on and check out in order to get a sense of how the race is going?
I think specifically in some of these states where we're expecting it to maybe to be a little slower, specifically, we expect the smaller counties to be able to process the vote and count the vote quicker. And so, yeah, we'll be looking at that closely by region, by county. And the other important part of the models that I didn't mention is we're comparing the precinct data and the county data to past data from recent races. So that gives us a good indication where things are changing. So we will get a sense of where things are going, even if we can't necessarily project the race because we're missing, say, Milwaukee City or some big area of the state. If something big is missing, we still may not be able to project it, but we'll have a sense on how things are looking, at least in the other part of the state that's reported.
And in, say, Florida, for example, is there one county that when you have results there, you like know how the state has gone, or is that a bit of a stretch?
Yeah, that's a stretch. We don't really look at it that way. We look at everything, all different regions, all counties. And the way the models work, the models stratify the states into geographic and party regions or party categories. And so really what we're looking for, instead of specific counties, is good representation within these stratifications, and then good representation of the stratifications across the state. And so there are situations where you can make a projection without certain quote-unquote important counties, depending on how the rest of the data has reported and what the margin is.
So that's something along the lines of, if you see that in Florida, Trump is overperforming his numbers in rural counties by 3 points, having already won Florida in 2016, that would look like an election that's on track to have Trump be the winner in Florida, something like that?
Right. Yeah, that comparison is very helpful. And in addition, the models really, it uses a ratio estimate to use the counties and the precincts that have reported and the past data to adjust and estimate the counties and precincts that have not reported. So it's like we're using as much data as possible to kind of adjust for areas that we don't have data from yet.
All right. I want to actually ask a little bit more about what kinds of things you're trying to prepare for or worried about on election night. But first,
hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
You are overseeing our elections coverage here at ABC News, overseeing the decision desk. What kinds of things are you worried about going wrong into election night? Or are you worried about, even if it's not something that goes wrong, what maybe stresses you out or keeps you up at night?
Well, you know, honestly, a lot of things keep me up at night. And I would say for the last number of weeks, I've woken up every night, say between 1:30 a.m. and 4 a.m. every night. And I'm thinking about something. It's often something not that important, but when you're sleeping, it kind of seems important. And so the only way I can get back to sleep is I have a notepad by my bed and I write down what I'm thinking so I don't have to keep thinking about it. And I'll wake up in the morning usually and it'll be something that actually is not that important. I don't have a lot of specific things that we're worried about. One thing that we normally do and what we did this year is we start rehearsing, testing, and practicing really early. We normally start in August. Well, this year, because of all these changes, we started in July. And this has gone on into September and October where we rehearse and practice 3 and now 4 or 5 times a week. And so I think from that standpoint, I think we're prepared for anything. You know, the team's been practicing, we've been training, and we have no idea what to expect. So just to give you an example, crazy things can happen. In 2012, with Hurricane Sandy out here, I lost power at my house for 2 weeks right before the election. That was unexpected. So what did I have to do? I had to go to plan B and I had to move into New York City into a hotel because I couldn't do anything from home with no power. We lost our T1 lines as a result of Hurricane Sandy. Those are the data pipelines that take in the data from Edison. And so for a little bit of time there, we had no way to get the data. Luckily, that came back up and we had backup VPN lines. But again, you just never know what crazy thing will happen. So we try to plan for every contingency and every scenario. And things will be a little harder this year with coronavirus because some members of our team will have to work remotely, just given the number of people that can be in the room. And so, yes, so there could be technology issues and that kind of thing. But with all the practice we've been doing, we think we have enough workarounds and backup scenarios where, you know, we'll deal with the situation when it happens.
One thing that I think a lot of newsrooms have discussed is cyber vulnerability and how, even if the results are secure, that a cyber attack on the infrastructure that reports the results, ranging from Secretary of State websites to actual news organizations like ours, could cause misperceptions amongst the public that could also do damage, even if, again, the results are secure. How are you thinking about that in terms of, you know, you're getting data in from Edison, as you mentioned, you're getting data in from the state's Secretary of States. And then, of course, you know, ABC News and 538, we have our own cyber vulnerabilities as well. So how are you taking all of that into account?
Well, we do have really good technology teams, both at ABC News and at Edison Research, and they've kicked the tires on all this. We have different backup scenarios for our systems and for the Edison system, so multiple ways to log in if certain ways of logging in have been compromised or are problematic. And in addition to that, the way Edison gets the county vote is really a decentralized method. So in many places, what Edison does is sends actual people to the counties themselves. And so Edison is getting data directly from the counties. Now, there are some counties where we take a data feed, and there are some states where we take a data feed, but we also have the option of relying on people on the ground. And so if a Secretary of State's website is hacked or compromised or the data feed is not usable, there are still people who are able to go to the county and then phone in the results to Edison. So in that decentralized situation, we would have confidence in those results.
We've mentioned Edison a couple times here, and I just want to make sure that our listeners understand what we're talking about. What does Edison do?
Edison Research is a company that we've been using since 2003, and they collect the exit poll. They conduct the exit poll for us, as well as the phone polls that I mentioned. They also count the vote for us. So what people may not realize is that there is no national organization or national government entity that counts the vote across the nation. And that's why news organizations have to tabulate the vote ourselves. And so we use Edison Research to do the vote tabulation. So when on our website or on our air, you're seeing, you know, 62% of the expected vote in, here's the vote. That is vote that Edison is collecting for us in a timely manner, such that we're able to report the results in a timely manner. And if it weren't for that, the vote count would be a lot slower. So Edison does all that for us. And they also, you know, provide us with background information on the election as well. And so we rely very heavily on them each election, and they do a great job for us.
And do all networks use Edison?
The four networks that use Edison are ABC News, CBS, CNN, and NBC, as well as a number of subscribers across the country, in addition to Reuters and a number of, you know, local subscribers, but also bigger internet companies as well.
Who doesn't use Edison?
So the Associated Press and Fox, they are both using AP data for this election, and I think for 2018 as well. And so those would be the two big ones that I'm aware of, and I'm sure there are other local ones as well.
So another contingency that we are planning for in newsrooms around the country is how President Trump reacts to the results. He said that he thinks the results of the election must be reported on November 3rd. As we've discussed here, that's simply not how elections work. But there is some concern that the president may declare victory based on partial results or something else along those lines. Of course, we don't actually know what will happen. We can only go off of what he said. Is that something you're considering at the decision desk? And would that affect your work at all?
No, that's not something we take into account, and it's not something we pay attention to at the decision desk. Certainly, the news division would be interested in that, and they'd have to decide how to report that. But at the decision desk, we're not influenced by internal pressure or communications from within the news organization, nor are we influenced or paying attention to external communications. So what the only thing we're looking at is the data as it's reporting on election night, the models, and when we have confidence in it. And so people externally can say and do whatever they want, but that does not factor into how we project the races.
I want to, while I have you here on this podcast, talk a little bit about past elections. You already mentioned 2012 and dealing with Hurricane Sandy. I think going into this election night, a lot of people have the 2000 election in mind and how difficult it was to project that race. And of course, in particular, the troubles in Florida. Were you working at the decision desk back then in 2000? And what was that like?
Yes, I was at ABC News. I actually came to ABC News in 1999. So that was my first election working in the decision desk at ABC. I had worked decision desk previously at Voter News Service for 5 years before that. But yeah, it was an interesting election, to say the least. The network and news organizations projected Gore the winner shortly before 8 o'clock. That was based partially on exit poll data and some limited amount of precinct data that had come in. That projection had to be retracted. It looked solid at the time. And in a retrospective postmortem that was done, you know, what we found was that the exit poll overstated Gore. And in addition, the model did not adequately take into account the absentee vote, which was more for Bush. And so one of the changes that came out of that, and that served us well in the last 20 years, is that we are a lot more cautious projecting off of the exit poll. And we are a lot more explicit as to how the absentee votes are incorporated into the models. And so as a result, in the last 20 years and the hundreds of races we've projected, we've not had a reoccurrence of that type of a situation.
Are there any other election nights that come to mind in planning for 2020 that make you think like, oh, we definitely learned some lessons there after all these decades of projecting elections? This is why I feel confident in 2020.
Nothing really sticks out from a specific year since Florida. Things have gone pretty smoothly, and there's nothing that sticks out as something that was unexpected. Because really what it comes down to is every state is different. In every election, every state is different. And that's the case again this time. The states that are different might be a little different than last time. So we don't just prepare overall. We actually have to look at and prepare for every single state. And that's what we've done in the past, and that's what we're doing this time, just based on what we expect to happen and the background research that we have.
I'm curious. I mentioned that in 2016, the initial exit poll results showed Hillary Clinton favored to win that election. At what point was it clear that those exit polls were wrong and that the result was headed in Trump's favor?
The early exit poll results had Clinton up a bit in some of those Midwest states, but those were not big leads, and those were leads definitely within the margin of error of the exit poll. And so it was within the range of, you know, anything could happen. But yeah, it wasn't until later in the night when we started projecting some of the races for Trump that Hillary Clinton was leading in earlier, you know, when the votes started coming in and we saw the small Hillary Clinton lead in the exit poll become a small Donald Trump lead in the vote count is when we had a sense that things were going another way.
And the race for the Senate is also competitive this year. Do you have thoughts on when you might be able to call those races or say overall who's likely to take control of that chamber?
Yeah, it's the same thing with the presidential race, that we'll only have a projected winner in the Senate when we have enough projected Senate seats. So it's exactly like the presidential race in that we're not going to say, okay, well, the Democrats have flipped these two, and so we can now project that it's likely that they'll take the Senate. We just have to wait for the number of seats. Unlike in the House, overall House, when we project that, that is one where we will project it based on early counting states and what we expect to happen in later counting states. So in the House races, we don't have to get to the exact number of seats. That is more of a projection because we're dealing with a lot more House races than, for example, Senate and presidential races.
Lastly here, for our listeners that are going to be, I'm sure, watching the results come in on election night, or maybe not, maybe people who listen to this podcast aren't actually going to be paying attention on election night, although I imagine that's a very small number of people. What should viewers keep in mind? What would you advise people to think about as they're waiting for your projections from the decision desk?
I would say, keep in mind that, you know, anything could happen. Polls in general, pre-election polls, are a good indication of what may happen. But like anything, polls are not perfect. And so I would just, before getting too far down a path of this person is going to win or that person is going to win, just really take it step by step and go where the projections lead us. And so, yeah, if a key state Donald Trump is needing is projected for Biden, that may be a good sign for Biden, but we need to see what happens in the other states as well. And just don't get locked into any one scenario is what I would say. Just wait for the projections to be made. And the other thing I'd say is if you're looking at the vote count on abcnews.com or wherever, just realize that the early vote that's coming in may be very unrepresentative of what it will be in that state. So if you see Trump or Biden ahead somewhere that's supposed to be a close race, it could be because it's just the election day vote in and Trump is doing very well there, or it could be it's just the mail-in vote and Biden's doing well there. So again, you know, not getting too excited about specific vote count results until there's a projection, because with the projection, we're looking to see that there's a good mix of data in, and what may be reported on election night, especially early, is likely not to be representative of how the state may turn out.
All right. Well, I think that about does it. So thank you so much, Dan, for sharing your time with us today.
All right. Thank you.
Dan Merkel is the Executive Director of Elections at ABC News. My name is Galen Druk. Tony Chow is in the virtual control room. Claire Bidigary-Curtis is on audio editing. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcasts@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with any questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or a review in the Apple Podcast Store or tell someone about us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Your play and save on your next new Infinity. Double your savings when you make your double play at Infinity of Akron and Infinity of Beachwood. Take me out to the ballpark in a new Infinity. All new 2024 QX80, now with incentives up to $10,000. Exclusively available at both of our locations, Infinity of Akron and Infinity of Beachwood. Make your play and double your savings today.